While we were singing, a note was handed to me to announce that Friday, Saturday, Sunday this week, 17th, 18th, 19th, the Baby Folds annual Festival of Trees will be at the Interstate Center. And that's a good thing. So go. Go. Buy things. Spend money. Yep. The event in Texas last Sunday that was so heinous and so evil and so wicked is also so humbling. And I think that maybe the worst feeling that we get when we hear something like that is just a feeling of, you can't stop those things. You can't. And so we have that feeling, but you know what? As a church, we need to do what we can. We need to do all we can to be safe and to protect ourselves. With that in mind, we've talked about this before, but I'm convinced that one of the last things I want to do here as pastor is put something in place that is not just an idea, but it's a legitimate approach to protecting the church. And so I've contacted the FEC, and I contacted Heartland, and I heard back from Heartland that they are now reconsidering their ideas because their ideas were really soft, and they want to strengthen them. So what this means for us is that some of you might be tapped on the shoulder and asked, will you be a part of a security team, as it were? And this team needs to always have representation here. You're not here every week. We understand that. So this team needs to be big enough that if danger in a person presents itself, that we'll have people who can deal with it. So we're just at the nascent stage. We're just, this thing is just being born, but we will put something together so that you can come to church and you can tell your friends to come to church, because we will do everything we can to assure your safety. So pray for us in that. It reminds me so much of the book of Ecclesiastes. You know, Ecclesiastes is where this is written in chapter 4. The teacher who wrote Ecclesiastes says, "Again, I saw all the oppressions that are done under the sun, and behold, the tears of the oppressed, and they had no one to comfort them. On the side of their oppressors, there was power, and there was no one to comfort them. And I thought the dead who were already dead more fortunate than the living who are still alive. But better than both is he who has not yet been and has not seen the evil deeds that are done under the sun." It's so accurate that what happens now has happened before. And before it happened then, it happened before. And civilization is just a recurrence of things that prove to us that we learn nothing from history. And I think the reason is, and the elders talked about it this morning, is that the enemy is the author of these things. The enemy is the hater of the church and the hater of that which is good. And so never able to create anything, what the enemy does is counterfeit things. And I believe our absolute best approach is to be humble, is to take steps that protect ourselves. We have to do that. When you come to church, you need to know that you're safe. And so we're going to do that. And pray for us in that. And if you're asked to be a part of this, and I could imagine that a dozen of us would be asked to be a part of this, don't say I'm too busy. Because how would you feel if, because you and others said no, someone was hurt? That would be awful. So nothing new under the sun. Nothing new under the sun. So when I was 12, and my buddy, Chubb Lubbs, he was one of my best friends, and I made what we thought was a very brave decision. We were going to go camping for 2 nights. And 2 nights was really brave, because you could take stuff out there for 1 night and get through with your food and your whatever, and even your fear. Because when it got dark and you're out in the wilderness in a tent with a kid, I'm with a kid who's 11, bigger than I was at that time, thus the name Chubb. He and I love to do this. So this was the deal. Hey, we're going to go for 2 nights. And I remember announcing that to my mom. Hey, Mom, Chubb and I are going to go camping for 2 nights. And here's the funny thing, guys, and I can't expect you to understand the way things were when I was a kid, but things were different because there was no question where we're going to get to do this. So I'm 12 and Chubb's 11. There's no question we're going to get to do it. And I remember my mom taking us out there, staying maybe for a half an hour as we set up a tent and started chopping wood and so on. But she was going to leave us. There weren't any cell phones. There was no checking in. And it was just going to be an adventure. And the only fear you had was just your own fear of the dark or of animals or whatever. But it was kind of a test of manhood to do something like this. And I'm sure some of you have done this kind of a thing. On the second morning, probably, I would say about 8 o'clock in the morning, I was fishing. So I didn't tell you, we're camping along the Illinois-Mississippi Canal. And we're camping at a spot where the canal triples in size, in width. So you've gone along and it's a little bit wider than this church is wide. Let's say half again wider in most of its flow. But then when we get to this spot, and this spot is northwest of Sheffield, Illinois, when you get to this spot, this thing triples. And it seemed enormous. And that's where we are. We're camped right there. I'm fishing. It's early in the morning, and I'm fishing. And I remember what I had on, I remember how I was fishing, and I remember that I was fishing for bluegills. And bluegills were found along the rocks that lined the canal there. And so I had a little popper fly on there, and I've got the line in my hands like this, and I'm just doing a little popping with this thing, when all of a sudden, wham, something hit it that was big. And I was certain that this something was a big bass, because that made sense. And I thought it was a bass until my uncle told me when he saw it in the freezer, Dave, that's a walleye. I'd never seen a walleye, and I'd caught a big one. But here's what was great about this. So I'm fighting this fish. It's like, wow, you know, Chubb, got one on, blah, blah, blah. And it's flopping around, and I'm doing this. And across the bridge, that is where that house is right there, across the bridge is rolling the milkman. And the milkman was a friend of mine. His name was Bob Sprouls. And he came to our house. I'm thinking he came 3 times a week. I loved Bob Sprouls. He brought good things to our house. He did. We were his first customers in Manlius. And on the anniversary of that day when we became his first customers, because we were at the very west side of town, he would give us one of everything in the truck free. So one milk, one butter, one ice cream, one loaf of bread, one cheese. And it was it was awesome. And he didn't have to do that. But more than anything, I love Bob because Bob was so happy. He was a happy person, and he liked me. So I'm fighting this fish, and I look up, and there is the milk truck on the bridge. Stopped, and Bob climbs out. And he goes to the bridge and he just watches me. What do you got there, Dave? I got a big one, kind of a thing. I mean, it was like I'm a little kid and I got this big fish, and it was big. And ultimately, I landed it, and he cheered for me, and way to go, Dave. And it was just, it was the comfort of security with which I grew up, that sense of security that was born in a genuine concern and appreciation of each other. And I will say more about that in a bit. But when I think about how the world has changed since that day, I tell you, if my 12-year-old grandson announced that he was camping, I would say, well, and your dad is going with you, correct? Or a scoutmaster is going with you, or some adult, responsible adult, is going with you, right? It's all changed because those things weren't happening. It's all changed, but nothing changes. I think we live in cycles of freedom and bondage, freedom and bondage. And those cycles have just gone throughout history. And I think we need to be wise and not feel like this has never been this way before, because it has. I'm always so kind of disappointed when I hear people, pundits or experts, say, oh, times have never been worse than they are now. I think, what are you talking about? You just don't have any sense of history. Have a sense of history, people. Have a sense of what our ancestors and their ancestors before them, what they have been through, so that we live in perilous times, but listen, we're all living with roofs over our heads and a microwave, you know, that's all you got to have. So, yeah. All right. So, please open to 2 John and we'll talk about this. Scott positioned it well. This is such a short 13-verse chapter, but studying this week was a breath of fresh air for me. It really was. And Scott, if you could hit this light right here, but we'll leave that one on, I think we'll be good. Oh, thank you so much. Sue, I'm going to say something. I don't mean to hurt your feelings, okay? It's just the truth. Okay, thanks. So when I went to college as a freshman, I had a girlfriend. And I'll stop right there. No. And she made a commitment. We never talked about it, but she wrote me a letter every day. And that included Saturday and Sunday, so that there would be a day like Tuesday when I would get two letters because she wrote me a letter every day. Now, I later burned these. Because they just didn't need to have any influence over me, and so I just thought we'll get rid of those. But looking forward to getting those letters was just a daily discipline that I had. Because otherwise, friends, no computers, no phones. We had a phone at the end of the hall in the dorm, a payphone. You just didn't have that kind of contact with people that we have today. It just didn't exist. But you know something? You didn't know that it could exist, so you didn't care. You just dealt with it as it was. And so every day I would get at least one letter, and I would describe these as love letters in that they were, for the most part, intended to encourage me, lift me up, and just let her know that she's thinking about me. And I found some life in otherwise a place where I never really talked to any girls and never did. Isn't that something at Bradley? I can't remember talking to a girl. That's crazy, isn't it? On the basketball team, as on the baseball team, those are the people I talked to, and I never talked to a girl. But I got these letters, and they were love letters. Some of you have written or received love letters. And you know that there's a connection to your heart that is beyond the to whom it may concern kind of letter, right? This is very personal. I'm saying that what John has provided the church is a fabulous love letter. This letter should grab our hearts. This letter should seem so meaningful and purposeful and personal. I think this is a beautiful reminder of the timelessness of the Bible, because everything in this letter we can shake our heads and say, yeah, I know. Thank you. So let's start and view this as a love letter. And I'm calling John the Romantic. Now, I don't mean that in the sense of Cupid romance. I mean that in the sense of classic literary romance. He is truly a romantic, and I love him for that. Let's read. The elder to the elect lady and her children, whom I love in truth, and not only I, but also all who know the truth. Because of the truth that abides in us and will be with us forever. Let's stop right there. What an opening! The elder, who is writing this letter? It's John. But he's positioning himself as the wise advisor, as the spiritually mature individual. That's who's writing this. He doesn't say John the Apostle. And I think that is an example of his romance, but also an example of the timelessness of this letter. Is that it's written by someone who's not identifying himself except in his eternal designation, the elder. To the elect lady and her children. I think our next slide will help us with that. So, rereading this, as I read it, I thought, maybe the thing that I love the most about this is how femininity, the reality of women, is so lifted up, is so honored. There's dignity. For the elder, I believe, is calling the church the elect lady. Now, read different ideas about this. Some said it's probably the church, but it also could be an individual. There could be an individual who was the elect lady. And if so, that's fine. But what John is saying there is, in this church reality and in this relationship, we all have a shared strength. And that shared strength is, we know something, we've accepted something, we've received something. What have we known, accepted, and received? The truth. Does that matter? Really, does that matter? Did it matter then? See, what they are saying to each other and to those who will listen is, we know something now that people for centuries have wondered about. We know the Messiah. We know the Creator. And John, in his closeness to Jesus, I just think about him as I wrote in the program. What if John showed up the night we are decorating the church? We wouldn't see we wouldn't see some guy who's too holy to do anything. Not at all. We would see a happy, free, willing, helpful, jovial, joyous man. And he would tell us about Jesus. And his eyes would light up. And he would be so free from the slings and arrows of the world. That's who he is here. And so he's writing to, my interpretation, the church and her children. His emphasis here on truth is in keeping with all of his writing, but it's really strong here. You know, when we read this whole letter and we look at it, say, why did he write that letter? I think he wrote that letter to try to encourage and oppose. Encourage and oppose. And we'll get to that opposition later. But there is a very significant reason to rejoice together in the truth. Okay, I've said truth many times. What is the truth? The truth to the Christian is that God became a man. Now to John, that is as significantly defensible as anything could ever be, because he beheld him. He touched him. As we heard last week in 1 John, we saw him, we heard him, we touched him. All of life was sensorially connected to this person. This was not any kind of a specter or vapor or ghost or anything. This was a man, and he loved us, and we grew to love him. The truth is Jesus. Jesus was God. Jesus was man. He was perfect, and we executed the perfect. But the perfect overcame the execution, and he lives forever, and he rules forever. And so we now anticipate his kingdom. And we're still in that same boat, are we not? That is the truth. Now he goes to a pretty common greeting in all of the epistles when he says, grace, mercy, and peace will be with us from God the Father and from Jesus Christ, the Father's Son, again, in truth and love. Love and truth are connected in this letter about as well as I've ever seen them connected. That to have them together is to really understand the power of each. If you look, and I'm sorry about the lousy print job I did, but if you look on your program, you see a quote from Blaise Pascal, and if you don't know who he was, I suggest you find out. He was one of the great minds of his day, and his day was the 17th century. He's a Frenchman. And he became a great defender of the faith. And he died at an early age, sadly. But this statement here, truth is so obscure in these times. Friends, this is like 1650. Now, when we think about 1650, we think, oh, everybody was religious and everybody was this and blah, blah, blah. No. No. Truth is so obscure in these times. I know that in France in 1650, there was just horrible social injustice. The nobility had all they needed, and the serfs and servants and poor people suffered and died. And so if you're Blaise Pascal, who, by the way, invented the, what do we call the things that adds up and subtracts real fast? Well, he did that too. What? Calculator. Calculator. Yes, that too. He invented a lot of things. But he invented the calculator. Yes. And falsehood so established, he says. So he's sitting in this world and he's thinking, the powers that be are so entrenched, and what is wrong with our world is so prevalent that truth and love are hard to find. And this is what he says. I love this. Almost 400 years ago. Unless we love the truth, we cannot know it. So you can sit here today and you can say, oh boy, he's Mr. History now again all of a sudden. And we don't need this really because I have HGTV waiting for me at home. And that's all I need. Yeah. I'm telling you that this very wise man was onto something here. Unless we love the truth. So we've said that the truth is Jesus, and it is. It's his teachings, and it is. Now, here's one that you're going to have to receive. It's the Bible, and it is. This whole Reformation understanding that we've been celebrating, that I really enjoyed all that celebration of the Reformation. I read so much, I learned so much. One of the powers of that Reformation was to provide the scriptures to the people in their own language. And the Reformers came up with a term that I've presented here, but maybe you weren't here. The term is sola scriptura. What is our authority in matters of faith and practice? The scriptures are our authority. Not the church council, not the school board, not the town council. In matters of faith and life, the scriptures are our authority. Unless we love the truth, we cannot know it. So if it's my determination that I only want to accept that which I agree with, then I don't really know the truth. I just know my own false assumptions. Brilliant. I'm so sorry I printed poorly down there. But the point of this was, things haven't really changed regarding that. Things haven't really changed. Okay. Grace, mercy, and peace. That verse. We must be careful that we don't abuse the Christian language. We've had a situation in our own fellowship here where we've been presented with the need to be able to relate to someone who doesn't understand our religious talk. I want you to think about that. When we talk about matters of faith, we use the same terms. And we need to not do that with everyone, because we can say, and I love these terms mean life to me, grace, mercy, and peace. They say to me that salvation is the bringer of those fabulous attributes and gifts. But friends, there are people in our culture to whom, if you said salvation will bring you grace, mercy, and peace, they're going to give you a blank stare, because that doesn't mean a lot to them. We need to ask God, we need to talk to each other about, how can I begin a connection with someone who has no basis in our language? Well, I'd love to talk to all of you about matters of faith, but we use our language, don't we? This Christian speak. I love it, because I know what it means. Maybe you do too. But friends, we need to be able to talk about the truth and not put it in this vernacular. Let's keep going. I rejoiced greatly to find some of your children walking in the truth, just as we were commanded by the Father. This whole idea of walking in the truth is beautiful, and we've seen it and talked about it before. And we're going to get to this in the next verse now. And now I ask you, dear lady, not as though I were writing you a new commandment, but the one we have had from the beginning, that we love one another. John knew Jesus. He is the one apostle who stayed with Mary when Jesus died. He says to us in his gospel that he was the closest to Jesus. And I don't think there's any reason to refute that or deny that. And so I trust him. And the church has said these writings are holy writings. These are sacred writings. And we need to trust them. And so we do. And here he says, this is the crux of the matter. Love one another. Love one another. I think the John who knew the God-man was able to get to a point where he said the character of God was eminently displayed in this person. And God is this beyond us power of the universe, transcendent, but he's also immanent. We can't fully understand him, but we can know him, and we know him in the God-man Jesus, and Jesus loved us. And Jesus says, love each other, love each other, love each other. Now, and I want to get to this. Let's touch on this, and then we'll get to the next thing. There are human institutions or groups or even just the kind of friendships that life brings us that are beautiful, that are enjoyable, that are good. But they're not founded, predicated on the truth of Christ. Now, I struggle with this some because I love those kinds of relationships. And when I'm in a group like that, I can think of just times when I'd be with my clients and I loved my clients. But I kind of learned that they knew I was a Christian and I didn't really have to do anything but live in front of them as my best witness. Because to talk to them about it was to, at that point, offend them. And so I lived that. I think that this character of Christ is most effectively presented when we live it. So that is why when we have a friend or an associate who doesn't understand the lingo, then live the lingo, is the point. Verse 6. And this is love, that we walk according to his commandments. This is the commandment, just as you have heard from the beginning, so that you should walk in it. Now let's stop right there. Scott has asked me, what am I calling these 4 weeks? And I'm calling these 4 weeks the end of the beginning. Because the canon of Scripture is about to come to a close here in a historical reality, with Revelation being the close. These books that we're reading were written near the end of the first century. And the writing of what we know as the canon of Scripture, the Bible, is just about done. But now the writing of the Bible and the insertion of the Bible into people's lives, which is what has happened, that's the beginning of something. That's the beginning of a church age that continues on. It's also the beginning of something that in our time perspective is hard to fully appreciate, I think. And that is that we are now living in the end times. When Jesus made his pronouncements about the end times, I don't think he was saying, wait 2,000 years and the end times are going to come. I think that there are qualities of living in anticipation that are already here and that the church has always lived with. And one of those is anticipation that Jesus is coming. And so I say here that there's an apocalyptic theme in this lovely letter. John has the church. He wants to protect this church. He wants this church to really thrive in loving the truth with each other. But then he says, but you have to recognize something. In these times, there's an enemy. Let's look at verse 7. For many deceivers have gone out into the world. And that I hear that, and it's like almost like there's a home base for deceivers. And so you go to this academy. Now, if you've read that Hideous Strength, then you know what I'm talking about here. But a home base for deceivers, okay, the class of '36, we're sending them out now. There is a reality in that, that the deception is coming from the chief deceiver and his minions. Do you really believe in him, Dave? You betcha. You betcha I do. What makes people so warped, so utterly warped, that they can do what they've done continually over the centuries? Counterfeit understanding. For many deceivers have gone out into the world, those who do not confess the coming of Jesus Christ in the flesh. Oh, so now he's qualifying this, and I think this is good. You could even have deceivers who are religious people, but what they're saying is, Christ is not coming back. His ideas were great. And we need to live by his ideas, but we don't anticipate that we'll ever see him. What he was teaching was not about any type of mastery over anything. But he's a good guy. Those are deceivers. The truth is, Christ came, Christ died, Christ rose again, Christ is coming again. That's the truth. Such a one is the deceiver and the antichrist. Strong language. So you see this apocalyptic language here. If you're talking about the antichrist, you're talking about end things. Well, those things were already in place, weren't they? Watch yourselves so that you may not lose what we have worked for, but may win a full reward. Everyone who goes on ahead and does not abide in the teachings of Christ does not have God. If a teacher comes in here, let's say that one of these guys who candidates comes in here and he says, oh, I love the church, I think I'll love the FEC, all that stuff. But I have a little different twist on things. I don't really believe in this new world that's supposedly being created. I don't believe in that stuff. That person is a deceiver. And that person is not to be received. We need to stay firm in what is true. If anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, do not receive him into your house or give him any greeting. For whoever greets him takes part in his wicked works. I think here's an important part about this. This doesn't mean, nor does it say, that anybody we meet who doesn't embrace Christ, we're supposed to turn away. I don't think it says that at all. I think this is talking about false teachers. This is talking about people who have set themselves up as authorities on these matters, and they're lying. They're lying. Those people are not to be received. That's what we just talked about. I lost two friends this past week. One of them was the man who got out of his truck and applauded me when I caught the walleye. I loved Bob Sprouls. He was a guy that throughout my life, when I would see him, always had a smile, always had a memory, always just made me feel good about where I grew up and who my friends were, who my parents' friends were. And he just died at 89, good life. Bob was a very devout Roman Catholic. And I'm certain that he found a strong support system for his own life in the fact that he was Roman Catholic. I know he did. Bob had a daughter named Debbie who was my age, and she was really beautiful. And I was always afraid to talk to her. I'm still afraid to talk to her. When I saw that he had died, it was like, oh, such a wonderful part of your security died. Then, later in the week, a man who came to my house every day, 6 days a week, at 7:30 in the morning, sat on his haunches, would come in the door and sit on his haunches, you know what I mean by that, no chair, for a half an hour, and would visit with the other driver of a gas truck, because we had these multiple employees, and my father, and I would always be in the middle of this if I could be, because of what they were talking about. It was awesome. They would talk about what the challenge of the workday was, where they were going and what they were doing and so on. But that wasn't why I was there. I was there because I wanted to hear what they had to say about life in our community, about the game, or about the Halloween prank, or about whatever. That, to me, was life and rich. And because of who I was, I joined in with this. My other siblings would, they liked these guys a lot, but they never sat there with them and just soaked. And I did, and I'm so grateful that I did. And I last saw this friend a year ago in November. And when he and I got together that day at the business that he took over from my dad, I had a reunion of the soul that I can't possibly tell you what it meant to me, that this good man, who, by the way, was also Roman Catholic, that this good man had such a very healthy view of family, of community, of truth. Both of these guys were very devout. I look at that and I think of how I respected them. And I suppose I got as much security out of their own faith as anyone could give me, because they weren't going to submit to things that just weren't true. They submitted to the teaching of their church as they received it. We didn't agree on everything. My dad certainly didn't agree on everything. But those three loved each other. And I see happening in our world the loss of these people. And I'm not far behind. I recognize that. And I see the words of Ecclesiastes saying, you know, things come and things go, but only that which is based on God has any real significance. Because why? Because everything else is vanity. I really think that that's what it comes down to, friends. As we look at our culture, I think it's so important that we are engaged with our culture, but not that we are giving up any truth. We're sharing truth. What is true? What would be true to Bill and Bob? Well, I'll tell you something that would be true to them that's true to me, that might not be true to some of you younger people, but I'll tell you that's true to me, and that is the whole idea of marriage. I think marriage is, interestingly, as the Catholics would say, it's sacramental. It's a sacred union. And it's not to be held lightly, or how about this? It's not to be redefined, because it's that significant. And I talk to, I have so many friends. I make wonderful friends. I love these people. And they're so ahead of me on so many things. But I talk to them about marriage because so many of them are just living with their lover and thinking, oh, we don't need marriage. And then I see them break up. And typically, I see the girl just devastated. And I'm thinking, you know, the world has sold you a bill of goods. Don't buy this deceptive bill of goods. Understand marriage. That's just one of the things. But I think it's so significant. Culture evolves. There are certainly things about our culture today which are better than things were 100 years ago. But there are also things that are not. And I think this is why we have to be the people that Pascal says, we have to be the people that love the truth so that we can receive that. Let's finish this book here. Though I have much to write to you, I'd rather not use paper and ink. Instead, I hope to come to you and talk face to face so that our joy may be complete. The children of your elect sister greet you. Here's where this whole idea that he's writing to the church really comes home to me. The elect sister is his body of believers. Ladies, God has said that Christ followers are transcendent. They have a transcendent relationship. We have these relationships with each other according to John and according to life, that our joy may be complete, that something in our makeup is put together and held together. Oh, it's our next song, so excuse me. I think I'll just lead this then. No. I'm so grateful for this little letter here, these 13 verses. It reminds all of us that there are some things that we just can't give away. And that all revolves around the person of Jesus. Can't give that away. It's also why I think the Reformation is so important. And as I've said several times, the Reformation wasn't a one-time event. The Reformation continues. We live in a time of Reformation. Our Reformation needs to be, who is Jesus? How can we love him? How can we serve him? How can we humbly submit to him and trust him for who we are and what we do? That's the Reformation. Reforms me, reforms you. But that must never end until he comes, because he is coming in the flesh. Amen? Woo! Won't that be something? That will be. Let's sing, Scott.